Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN World Food Programme, WFP, said on Friday that a ship it has chartered to load up with Ukrainian wheat was preparing to dock in one of the country's Black Sea ports. This would be the first shipment of humanitarian food assistance under the UN-led Black Sea Grain Initiative, whose signatories are Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN. The WFP chartered vessel, Brave Commander, left Istanbul's waters on Wednesday. It has a maximum capacity of 23,000 tons. In total, the UN agency has purchased an initial 30,000 tons. In a statement, WFP said that the development marked another important step in efforts to reintegrate Ukrainian food into global markets. A record 345 million people in 82 countries now face acute food insecurity, while up to 50 million people in 45 countries are on the edge of famine, the World Food Programme has warned. Staying with Ukraine, there have now been more than 445 attacks on healthcare in the country, causing 86 deaths and 105 injuries, the UN health agency WHO has reported. According to the World Health Organization, the attacks have been against health facilities and transport, personnel, patients, supplies and warehouses. Urgently needed care for the most vulnerable individuals has been undermined as a result, WHO noted in its latest update on healthcare attacks since the Russian invasion on the 24th of February. Ukraine's humanitarian crisis has also continued, with more than 6.6 million people internally displaced, an increase of 300,000 since the end of June, said UN Migration Agency IOM. The conflict has also created 6.3 million refugees, according to UN Refugee Agency UNHCR, while 5.5 million people who were previously displaced have now returned home. An alert now from UN humanitarian agency OCHA, which warned on Friday that the funding shortfall for aid operations is the biggest it's ever been, at nearly $34 billion. The news comes at a time when global needs are at an all-time high too, with a record 303 million people in crisis worldwide. UN-coordinated relief projects have been costed at almost $50 billion this year. Although funding pledges have reached their highest level ever, at more than $15 billion, needs are outpacing the money coming in, said OCHA spokesperson Jens Laake.
Never before have humanitarians been called to respond to this level of need, and they are doing so in ever more dangerous environments. According to data from the NGO Humanitarian Outcomes, with whom we partner every year to highlight these numbers, more than 148 workers were killed in the line of duty last year, the highest number of fatalities since 2013.
All but two of the aid workers who died were national staff, highlighting the perils that national aid workers often face, said Mr. Laake, who noted that another 203 aid workers were injured and 117 were kidnapped last year. To commemorate their sacrifice, World Humanitarian Day is held annually on the 19th of August. This year's theme for the day is It Takes a Village, to focus on how aid workers of all nationalities work together to alleviate extreme suffering. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
It is very important that decent conditions are created for employment of women. Now they can bring more produce with them for trade, and they can realize more income, of course.
There are very big number of refugees who attend to this market. This market must be improved to become an international market that should link Uganda to other parts of the world.
Up to 20-30% of occupants in the market are refugees. It's already exciting. It's improving infrastructure for them to do business. The work we've done has greatly improved people's lives.
This is Conor Lennon from UN News, and you're listening to The Lid Is On, part of our special mini-series coming to you from northern Uganda, the district of Yumbe. I'm at the Okubani Market. Feels like I'm in a sauna. So I can only imagine what it's like for the vendors who are here. Some of them without any shade at all, and some of them with just a plastic tarpaulin supported by wood and I've been under some of those, and they're also extremely hot. So the market buildings that have been constructed with the help of the UN have made a huge difference for the vendors who are lucky enough to be working underneath them. I'm walking past them now. The vendors who've been chosen to occupy these stalls are selling fruit and vegetables and fish, basically products which are more perishable, whilst those who are selling clothes and other goods are for now still working underneath the hot shelters.
In this market of Okuban Market, we have those who sell second-hand clothes. This is especially where we are standing. And they also sell agricultural products. That is the cassava, maize, cereal crops, and they also sell fish. That is the dagger fish and Nile cod fish that comes from River Nile. And the communities here also sell oil seeds.
That's Isosiga Abubakar. He's responsible for monitoring all of the activities at the market, which is becoming more and more important for Yumbe.
The community also do mobile money to transact their businesses. In the middle, we have those who sell green vegetables. We have the fishmongers who have also been put in the middle. Market stalls are really not enough. In the future, maybe this could be improved better by having some permanent structures like lockups that will cover around the whole market and even inside some more market stalls. With the help of the partners and the donors, those who are willing to help us, because we are hosting the refugees, and there are a very big number of refugees who attend to this market. And as a result, we felt that this market must be improved to become an international market that should link Uganda to other parts of the world.
The market's located within the Bidi Bidi refugee settlement, which was at one point during the South Sudanese War the largest of its kind in the world. Joel Mundua is a specialist on governance at the UN Capital Development Fund in Uganda. He told me that the settlement is in a part of the country where memories of conflict and suffering are still fresh.
The region suffered from 2 decades of war, internal conflicts, the Lord's Resistance Army, the Joseph Kony War, 2 decades. And so the region remained behind the rest of the regions in terms of poverty and the service delivery. And so this program was designed to respond to that. And the aim was to consolidate stability in the region so that it doesn't relapse into war again, and also eradicate poverty and nutrition and lay foundations for sustainable socioeconomic development in the area. We've also supported them in the area of local economic development. We also created a dedicated fund we call Local Government Excellence Fund for economic infrastructure that can, one, generate revenue, create jobs, and help them improve infrastructure in the area. A number of the projects are now generating for them revenues. Many of these projects are located in rural growth centers. Many of those rural growth centers are urbanizing. So an economic investment, one economic investment attracts a number of private sector investments in the area. The area begins to grow. So from being a village to a rural growth center, now to a town council, the market in Yumbe, it has also helped create collaboration and interaction between refugees and host communities. That's where the refugee and the host communities interact for business. Up to 20-30% of occupants in the market are refugees. It's already exciting, improving their business environment, improving infrastructure for them to do business. Has been a priceless intervention from UNCDF. The work we've done has greatly improved people's lives.
Joel Mundua from the UN Capital Development Fund. The Okubani market is run by a management committee, many of whom are women, youth and refugees. The committee chose 130 traders selling fish and vegetables to occupy 2 market buildings offering shade and covered with solar panels. They were built with funding from the UN Development Initiative for Northern Uganda, the local government, and partner donors. The initiative also saw improvements to the market that would help women traders during the working day, with facilities such as breastfeeding rooms and a playground area. The market currently holds around 2,000 pitchers, but only 130 are currently available under cover. It's just a start, but Mr. Abubakar says there are ambitious plans for growth.
Our vision for this market in 10 to 20 years, where international community members can come with their items, especially people who could go to India, to Japan, and Southern Sudan to bring those items that are not within, and this can be sold here. Uganda being one of the landlocked countries, we believe that it will boost the market, and if this market, once it becomes an international market, will raise the economy of this country and of this district. There is a lot that has improved. Everybody who comes in the market is allowed to enter inside, and those other pitches, if you would construct them in the future, that will also generate money to this market. And this has also helped the entire community, especially the youth, the women, and those from the refugee settlement who sell most of their agricultural produce in this market. There are people who come from Arua, from Koboko, to buy this item. And that means that the livelihood of the community here, to some extent, has improved than before. And it is our prayer this place becomes a town council in the near future.
Mr. Abubakar introduced me to Ezati Zura, one of the traders lucky enough to be sheltered from the unforgiving sun.
This fish is very nice. It has a lot of iron. It builds your bones very strong, and people like it. During like rainy season, those who attend to the market, the number reduces. During festival season, they can sell like over 4 bags, 3 bags that they brought in the market, and they get a lot of money out of it. She thanks those who donate money for the construction of this market stage. Before, they were in a market where there was no stage. The sun heat was so intense, and when it rains, it waters these things. They get rotten, and when they reach home, they need to dry them. And since now the market sales were constructed, when they were here, they are so happy, and that's why you see them in the sale. They are not sweating like before. And the only challenge they have here is the market stalls are a little bit tall. They expected, if they were consulted by the engineers, the size of this thing would have been down, because it needs a stool. It is good for those who are tall. And she says next time, if it is there, they must also be consulted so that their interest is catered for. Otherwise, they are very happy for the construction of this house. You can see from her mood and from her appearance, she's really excited.
Fish vendor Ezati Zura, who was actually perched on the countertop of the covered market structure, which, as she said, was probably built with taller people in mind. However, conditions for her and other women traders are clearly improving, and this is at the heart of the UN's plan for the market and other markets in northern Uganda. As Dmitry Pozhedaev, the head of the UN Capital Development Fund office in the country, explained.
Because we know that about 70% of all traders in Ugandan markets, and generally speaking in less developed countries, are women, it is very important that decent conditions are created for employment of women. So by offering additional facilities, such as, for example, a breastfeeding room, children's playground, and other facilities, it creates those conditions for women to be able to extend their working day, for example, to extend the hours when they are making their business in the market, and therefore also positively to contribute to their income. Now they can bring more produce with them for trade, and they can realize more income, of course. There is a market committee with the participation of women, which exercises daily management of that marketplace. That contributes to improvement of the socio-economic position of women in the community. And this is a longer-term effect. The positive implications that that the market has, in addition to the direct purpose of coming to the market to buy or to sell something, they have many other needs, associated needs. They need some catering. They may need, again, access to financial services, talking about banks. They may need access to some administrative services and so on and so forth. So the market becomes like a nucleus for a small service center, and it has the potential to grow. We have observed in several places in Uganda, the markets that were built with UNCDF support have become centers of future urban agglomeration because they attract additional resources, additional labor force, additional trade flows, and so on and so forth.
You've been listening to The Lid Is On with me, Conor Lennon, coming to you from the sweltering Okubani market in Yumbe district in northern Uganda. This episode is part of a mini-series of episodes recorded in northern Uganda with the support of the UN Capital Development Fund. You can find out more about this and the other stories recorded in northern Uganda on our website, news.un.org.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The situation at Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant could lead to disaster, the UN Secretary General said on Thursday, directly appealing for all military activities there to end immediately. The past several days have seen reports of further deeply worrying incidents that could, if they continue, lead to disaster, Antonio Guterres said. His comments came ahead of an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council in response to the Zaporizhzhia crisis, which Russia and Ukraine deny targeting. Mr. Guterres urged the withdrawal of all military personnel and equipment and any further deployment of forces there. The UN chief also called for an urgent agreement at a technical level to fix a safe perimeter around the plant. The number of young people globally who can't find work this year is set to reach 73 million. That's a full 6 million more than before COVID-19, the UN Labour Agency said on Thursday. According to the International Labour Organization, ILO, the pandemic has caused much higher unemployment losses for 15 to 24-year-olds in securing work than older workers. Here's Martha Newton, ILO Deputy Director General for Policy.
We know that the COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc on youth labor markets throughout the world, and it's exposed a number of shortcomings in the way the needs of young people are addressed, especially the most vulnerable first-time job seekers, school dropouts, fresh graduates with little experience, and those who are remaining inactive, not by choice.
The UN Labour Agency report found that young women have struggled more than their male counterparts to find work during the pandemic. The UN's top human rights official, Michelle Bachelet, spoke out on Thursday at the high number of Palestinians, children included, who've been killed and injured in clashes with Israeli soldiers this year. Her comments followed violence involving Israeli forces and Palestinian armed groups in Gaza last weekend that left 17 children dead. And on Tuesday, two more youngsters were killed during Israeli law enforcement operations in the West Bank, bringing the total Palestinian death toll this year to 37. Inflicting hurt on any child during the course of conflict is deeply disturbing, and the killing and maiming of so many children this year is unconscionable, Ms. Bachelet said, adding that an almost total lack of accountability persists in the occupied Palestinian territory. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights condemned Israeli strikes that had hit apparently civilian objects, issuing a reminder that such attacks are prohibited under international law. Ms. Bachelet also said that Palestinian armed groups had launched hundreds of rockets and mortars at Israeli targets that had injured 70 people, according to the authorities. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Liz Scafidi at UN News. While the economic crisis has impacted numerous sectors across Sri Lanka, nutrition security has been particularly affected. According to recent UN data, 6.3 million people have been rendered food insecure, meaning that they cannot access a nutritious diet on a daily basis. The World Food Program in the country is working toward solutions to the current food crisis. UN News' Anshu Sharma spoke to WFP's country director, Abdur Rahim Siddiqui, and began by asking him about the economic impacts on people's lives.
The impact of economic crisis is cross-sectoral. However, the food and nutrition security has been particularly affected by the decision taken by the government to move to organic agriculture or banning of inorganic fertilizer. It has impacted the food production and the agriculture sector at large. The production of rice during the last agricultural season, which we call Maha, was reduced by around 40%. And the current outlook of the current crop, which is called Yala, is not promising either. So there are speculations that we'll have short production for the current season also.
So you've been working on the ground with an unprecedented food inflation and fuel crisis facing the country. What is the situation there, the ground situation as such?
Yeah, as you can imagine, the people are really facing hardship as far as food security is concerned. We have recently carried out, when I say we, it's between WFP and FAO, have jointly carried out a crop and food security assessment mission. And according to the report, around 6.3 million people are food insecure. That means they cannot access nutritious diet on a regular basis. Now, rising food costs makes it harder for people to meet their daily food needs. So around 6.3 people are not consuming adequate diets. It is estimated that around 13.5 million people are regularly using food-based coping strategies, such as eating less preferred or less nutritious food and limiting portion size. They're also exercising what we call livelihood-based coping strategies. For example, they have very limited income opportunities, so they are resorting to different coping mechanisms, such as running out of their savings, accessing loans, asking for financial assistance, so on and so forth.
So agriculture sector is also in distress. So what are the reasons for decline in production, and does this raise any concerns that situation could deteriorate?
The reason for short production or scarcity of food is multifarious. As I already mentioned, the economic crisis followed by decision to move to organic agriculture was one of the contributing factors. Having said that, if you're talking about addressing the current situation, it depends how fast the government and other stakeholders would address the immediate and intermediate measures. For example, availability of fertilizer, seeds, pesticides, fuel and electricity are very important. Unless we have assurance, consistent supply of those items, it will be quite difficult to bring agriculture back.
So what has been the impact on different social groups? Do you see any divide in terms of rural and urban areas, or is there any disproportionate impact when it comes to gender or disability or other such factors?
The impact of current crisis is not uniform. Different part of the country have different impact. For us, we have different ecological and climate zones, and we have seen that normally the dry zones are the worst hit. In general, if I say that the central province, the northern province are worst hit. The urban poor is also one of the groups who are hard hit because of this crisis, because they have very limited income opportunities and they are the direct victim of the skyrocketing of food commodities. So on one hand, they cannot have access to their regular income. On the other hand, they have to buy and rely on the commodities that they have to buy from the groceries. For any kind of crisis, the most vulnerable cross-section of the population are pregnant and nursing mothers, elderly people, persons with disability, under 5 children. That is equally important and valid and relevant in the context of Sri Lanka.
So do you think the war in Ukraine has had any effect on aggravating the food crisis in the country?
Indeed, the war in Ukraine has ripple effect around the world. The rising price of food commodities and fuel have direct impact in Sri Lanka as well. For example, Sri Lanka imports wheat, pulses, vegetable oil and sugar. And of course, this war has contributed not only difficulties in terms of accessing those commodities, but also the supply chain prices has also gone very, very high. Sri Lanka also had the opportunity to generate some income by exporting tea, which has been badly affected. And also there used to be tourism from Ukraine and Russia that has also been negatively impacted.
So in terms of food security, how is WFP working to improve the situation? What has been the response from the international community?
Okay, in order to address the current humanitarian crisis, WFP has launched an emergency operation. We plan to target 3.4 million people across the country. Out of that, 1.4 million people will be receiving unconditional food assistance, which will be targeted towards pregnant and nursing mothers, elderly people, people with disability, and so on and so forth. Second, around 1.1 million kids will be supported to have the school meals. So it's basically a school meals program. WFP will try to support with rice and pulses. And third, we'd like to support the nutritional aspects of Sri Lankan population. So about 1 million nursing mothers and pregnant women and children under five will be receiving fortified blended food.
So what's the way forward from here? What more needs to be done to help people facing food insecurity?
So while WFP has stepped up with emergency food assistance, but that is not enough. So it is quite imperative that agriculture has to be back to its normal pace. So while WFP will be supporting to address the immediate food security situation, so we'd like to see that there will be an overall improvement of the situations for the smallholder farmers so that they will have adequate access to fertilizer, seeds, pesticides and fuel so that they will be able to go back to their agricultural production as soon as possible. However, I would like to mention that we need $63 million to scale up our current intervention. As of today, we have been able to mobilize only one-third of the required funding level. So I would urge the international community to help support WFP so that we can implement the plan. That is, we should be able to reach out around 3.4 million people as soon as possible.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed his deep solidarity with the people and government of the Republic of Korea on Wednesday after deadly flooding and landslides. At least nine people died as some of the heaviest rainfall in decades left parts of Seoul submerged when the Han River burst its banks. The UN World Meteorological Organization tweeted on Tuesday that 451 millimeters of rain, or 17.8 inches, had been recorded in the Seoul area in less than 48 hours, and that more was to come. According to reports, the country has seen its longest monsoon in 7 years. Landslides also forced 1,500 people from their homes, and Prime Minister Chung Sye-kyun called for the provinces of Gyeonggi and Chungcheong to be declared disaster zones. Mr. Guterres's message came ahead of his scheduled two-day trip to the Republic of Korea beginning Thursday. I want to express my deep solidarity with the government and the people of the country and offer my condolences to the families of all those who have perished in the floods, he said. To Ukraine, where the top UN aid official in the country has appealed for $4.3 billion in increased funding for those affected by the war. Since the Russian invasion in February, local, national and international humanitarian organizations have helped more than 11 million people across the country. But the reality is that more people need support, said UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Ukraine, Denise Brown. She said that at least 17.7 million people, that's over a quarter of Ukraine's population, will need assistance in the months ahead. That number is about 2 million more than had been estimated in April, said Ms. Brown, who warned that there were fears for this winter, as more people will probably displace from areas where they cannot access gas, fuel or electricity to heat their homes. The new financial request, up from $2.25 billion 3 months ago to $4.3 billion now, is to make sure that aid workers have the funding and resources necessary to continue delivering critical assistance and protection services to people across Ukraine until December 2022. Around 10,000 Daesh fighters are believed to operate in the border area between Syria and Iraq, the UN Security Council has heard. In an update on the activities of the terror group, which is also known as ISIL, UN counter-terrorism chief Vladimir Voronkov maintained that it still posed a rising threat to international security, with between $25 to $50 million in assets. In addition to being present in Iraq and Syria, the group is also operational in Afghanistan, Somalia, and Central, Southern, and Western Africa. Mr. Voronkov also noted that Daesh fighters had also significantly increased the use of unmanned aerial systems in the past year, including in northern Iraq. and he explained that in Afghanistan, although there has been a drop in the number of attacks claimed or attributed to the local Daesh affiliate, they have expanded into northeast and eastern regions. From Uganda, a Daesh affiliate had widened its area of operations into the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the UN officials said, adding that yet another affiliated group had intensified small-scale attacks in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
We've seen a reduction in terms of cost for batteries and also kerosene. So with the solar system, it reduces really on those expenses.
With the current light system, there are no smokes inside the houses. You find the system is really good.
When it's fully charged up to 100%, you can even use it for 2 days. Like when it's raining, there's no sunshine, but the power still remains there.
You're listening to The Lid Is On, the flagship podcast from UN News with me, Conor Lennon. This is the third of our Grassroots Development in Northern Uganda mini-series, looking at the impact of UN projects aimed at reducing the development gap between the north and the rest of the country. So far, we've visited an independent, locally owned honey company, which is providing regular employment for over 1,700 beekeepers and winning international orders. And we've seen how smallholder farmers in remote villages are learning the benefits of getting online and, for the first time, getting a credit score, which allows them to take out loans and sell more produce. On this episode, we're focusing on electricity, or rather the lack of it, and the difference that even a small solar generator can make to people's lives. It's estimated that around 789 million people lack any access to electricity. Most of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. The unreliability or non-existence of electricity for so many people worldwide is one of the reasons that some 2.4 billion people are still using inefficient and polluting cooking systems. Not only does this contribute to carbon emissions, but it also causes around 4 million deaths each year from the effects of smoke inhalation. And being connected to an electricity grid doesn't guarantee reliable power. At the hotel we were staying at in northern Uganda, the power would cut out at least a couple of times a day, an occurrence that staff found entirely normal and took in their stride. This has a huge impact on businesses, health facilities, and government services, and is an obstacle to development. The UN believes that, in countries like Uganda, solar energy could be a big part in addressing that challenge. Dmitry Pozhadaev, the head of the UN Capital Development Fund's Uganda office, explains.
Access to electricity is still a challenge in Uganda. This, of course, has multiple implications on businesses, on persons, on government institutions, and so on and so forth. Ensuring access to solar is important in several respects. It provides additional opportunity for businesses, particularly micro and small, particularly in rural areas. It opens up an opportunity for some processing or some storage or some additional value-adding activity. It also allows them to extend their working hours, because now they can work longer than just during daylight.
This is Mariam Ayikoro. She's a sales agent for Brightlife, a company bringing solar power to Arua in the West Nile district of northern Uganda.
Then account number is the serial number, of course. I'm going to put in the serial number, 800.
She's come for a follow-up visit to meet Abasiku Aragajani, one of her clients in an Arua village.
721. Currently we're in Andelizwa. The area is called Andelizwa. We are here to visit the customers and then see how the systems have been installed and how the kids are using the lights for reading their books. The client has the TV system. He uses the TV for watching football and then other channels, and then he uses the light systems for the kids to read books and then also to provide light inside their house and also the church phones using the system. We do sales like home to home, shops, markets. That's where we get sales.
You know, why I chose bright light, when it's fully charged up to 100%, you can even use it for 2 days. It doesn't go off. When even it is raining, like when it is raining, there is no sunshine, but the power still remains there. Because it stores power, even when there is no sunshine, but that power still remains there. Once it is fully charged, like 100%, the power remains there. I use it as a security light to protect me from thieves. Whenever they want to break in, when they get the light is on, the kids do watch videos and other movies. So it keeps the kids around. Because where they are sleeping, the room is separate from mine. If anything, I could provide them with the light there. So it acts as a source of security. It helps them because when they go to school, when they want to study, they enter in the room here, they use this light here to study.
Arua is in a region of Uganda with high poverty, which makes it a risky proposition for companies like BrightLife to attempt to sell their solar packages there. That's why the UN Capital Development Fund, or UNCDF, decided to provide BrightLife with the financial support that would allow them to expand into West Nile. Julius Magala is the Digital and Energy Finance Coordinator at the UNCDF Uganda office.
UNCDF has been funding a number of businesses aimed at increasing access to energy in underserved populations, including Arua. BrightLife is extending access to solar and cooking solutions to the people in West Nile, specifically in Arua and also Nebbi. BrightLife has been very instrumental in selling solar products for households, but also for productive use, energy-efficient cookstoves, reduce on the amount of fuel that is used for cooking, lighting. They also provide the option for phone charging, and of course it comes with a radio or TV. So all these products can be got on a pay-as-you-go, which means that customers can pay for the product in installment. They make an initial payment and then the balance is paid over a given period of time. And because of that model, that actually makes the product much more affordable to customers that wouldn't have afforded them. And since they started, they've been able to sell over 1,800 solar products in just a period of, less than actually 2 years, given that we've also been in a very tricky COVID situation. So it's quite popular. The products are working well. We have a lot of customers that are testifying that they're able to save. There is also improved indoor air pollution, and we're also seeing a lot of their customers also upgrading from one product to the other. So there are customers that have started with just lighting and phone charging, and after time they're upgrading that to include radio and TV. That gives them at least more use for their solar system. There's quite a lot of benefits, actually with the solar system. I think one is really the reduction in cost. They're actually spending. Typically, they're spending on batteries, they're spending on kerosene, and we've seen a reduction in terms of cost for batteries and also kerosene. So with the solar system, it reduces really on those expenses. The second, I think, benefit, especially with solar systems that provide, radio and also TV, is really access to the much-needed information, but also the ability for families that do have students to actually continue, studying at night.
Julius Magala from the UN Capital Development Fund. The UNCDF funding for BrightLife meant that they could employ Mariam Ayakoru, a young, ambitious woman who has big plans.
For myself, I have dreams. I'm a senior first student. I really have that dream of getting back to school, though I don't have the school fees. That's why I'm with the company to help myself gather that school fees that can help me get back to school and continue with my studies. So to me, the company is okay because I earn commissions daily. I make a sale today, I get paid the next day. That is what I save. About my job, I love it because I work with communities I visit different people, different homesteads every day. I get to know people. I get to interact with them, and I find it so pleasing to work with the community because I learn a lot from them, like how to be social and that hospitality. Yeah, most of them are hospitable. They're so welcoming, and then they're social, they laugh, and they make friends. I really love that, and I enjoy it so much. Yeah, to me, it is really a clean source of energy, that is to me, because you find the light. What they used to use before they bought the system, they use these other lamps, these ordinary lamps that can produce smoke, which is also not good for their health. So currently, there's no smoke in the house. You find they use the light systems. They normally have these batteries that are weak for charging phones. It is not so pleasing, but with the current light system, the TV system, they are able to charge phones. There are no smokes inside their houses. You find the system is really good.
Back in Abasiku Aragajani's village, his children are watching TV. For entertainment right now, but as Mr. Magala says, they have much greater access to information. The children also have their school books out, and when it's time to do homework, the solar light installed in their room will allow them to carry on working when the sun goes down. UN investments in solar power projects are also making a difference at this thriving market in Yumbe. On the next episode of our Uganda mini-series, we'll hear from some of the traders and find out how it's providing a livelihood for Ugandans, as well as refugees and migrants from South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You've been listening to The Lid Is On with me, Connor Lennon. This mini-series was produced with support from the UNCDF in Uganda. Special thanks to Rachel Kenton-Yingi and David Michal.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres has condemned a recent attack on a nuclear power station in southern Ukraine. Any attack on nuclear plants is a suicidal thing, and I hope that those attacks will end, Mr. Guterres told the Japan National Press Club in Tokyo on Monday. Moscow and Kyiv have denied responsibility for the latest strike at the Zaporizhzhia plant over the weekend. The complex, Europe's largest nuclear power site, has been under Russian control since the early days of the war, but Ukrainian technicians are still running it. The shelling of the plant prompted the UN International Atomic Energy Agency to warn that the way Zaporizhzhia was being run and fighting going on around it posed a very real risk of a nuclear disaster. When asked why a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine had not yet been realized, the UN chief said they'd been working very closely with Turkey, which had launched a new initiative in relation to a possible start of peace negotiations, but he explained that Ukraine cannot accept that its territory is taken by another country and that Russia does not seem ready to accept that areas it had taken will not be annexed by the Russian Federation or give way to new independent states. A warning now about extreme heat in Iraq, where temperatures have soared to 50 degrees Celsius in recent weeks. In a call for action to protect workers, the UN labour agency, ILO, has called for measures to be put in place to reduce the risks for those working under extreme heat. One in four workers in Iraq is employed in either construction or agriculture, sectors already considered among the most hazardous sectors in the world. The ILO is becoming increasingly concerned about their working conditions. The ILO stated that while workers in some parts of Iraq have been given time off because of the heat, measures must be taken to protect those in informal, temporary, seasonal or day labour who cannot afford to miss a day of work. This could include providing appropriate clothing, access to drinking water in shaded areas and being encouraged to work during cooler hours with appropriate break times. Meanwhile, the UN chief called on Monday for the rights and traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples to be implemented and promoted by member states. In his message, the Secretary General recalled his official visit last month to Suriname. The smallest and least populated South American country is a biodiversity conservation leader with a carbon negative footprint. There he saw firsthand its rich biodiversity and how indigenous peoples protect their rainforest. His message coincides with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, which this year is highlighting the role of indigenous women in preserving and passing on traditional knowledge.
Indigenous women are knowledge keepers of traditional food systems and medicines. They are champions of indigenous languages and cultures. They defend the environment and indigenous people's human rights. To build an equitable and sustainable future that leaves no one behind, we must amplify the voices of indigenous women.
Katie Dartford, UN News. This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres has condemned a recent attack on a nuclear power station in southern Ukraine. Any attack on nuclear plants is a suicidal thing, and I hope that those attacks will end, Mr. Guterres told the Japan National Press Club in Tokyo on Monday. Moscow and Kyiv have denied responsibility for the latest strike at the Zaporizhzhia plant over the weekend. The complex, Europe's largest nuclear power site, has been under Russian control since the early days of the war, but Ukrainian technicians are still running it. The shelling of the plant prompted the UN International Atomic Energy Agency to warn that the way Zaporizhzhia was being run and fighting going on around it posed a very real risk of a nuclear disaster. When asked why a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine had not yet been realized, the UN chief said they'd been working very closely with Turkey, which had launched a new initiative in relation to a possible start of peace negotiations, but he explained that Ukraine cannot accept that its territory is taken by another country and that Russia does not seem ready to accept that areas it had taken will not be annexed by the Russian Federation or give way to new independent states. A warning now about extreme heat in Iraq, where temperatures have soared to 50 degrees Celsius in recent weeks. In a call for action to protect workers, the UN Labour Agency, ILO, has called for measures to be put in place to reduce the risks for those working under extreme heat. One in four workers in Iraq is employed in either construction or agriculture, sectors already considered among the most hazardous sectors in the world. The ILO is becoming increasingly concerned about their working conditions. The ILO stated that while workers in some parts of Iraq have been given time off because of the heat, measures must be taken to protect those in informal, temporary, seasonal or day labour who cannot afford to miss a day of work. This could include providing appropriate clothing, access to drinking water in shaded areas and being encouraged to work during cooler hours with appropriate break times. Meanwhile, the UN chief called on Monday for the rights and traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples to be implemented and promoted by member states. In his message, the Secretary-General recalled his official visit last month to Suriname. The smallest and least populated South American country is a biodiversity conservation leader with a carbon-negative footprint. There he saw firsthand its rich biodiversity and how indigenous peoples protect their rainforest. His message coincides with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, which this year is highlighting the role of indigenous women in preserving and passing on traditional knowledge.
Indigenous women are knowledge keepers of traditional food systems and medicines. They are champions of indigenous languages and cultures. They defend the environment and indigenous people's human rights. To build an equitable and sustainable future that leaves no one behind, we must amplify the voices of indigenous women.
Katie Dartford, UN News.